some special guests with us, John and Lise Francis. They were here last night and shared in the cafe about things about the children's home. I just thought I'd give you a bit of perspective because some of you don't know them and some of you don't perhaps know a lot about our involvement with the children's home in Honduras. John and Lise have just recently retired from a career as missionaries in Quebec, church planting in Spain, Barcelona, church planting and teaching and working with the children's home in Honduras. Lise is very involved with the home and still is, even though she's left and has now moved to Quebec. She's still involved in trying to secure sponsors for the home. John, for several years, was teaching pastors and equipping pastors and church leaders in Central America. And now he's wrapped that up, and now they're down touring the East, and we were blessed that they could come and share this weekend. About 7 years ago, when I came back here as pastor, I went to a Fellowship National Conference in Banff, and their daughter Melody did a presentation about the children's home. And you know how it is, if you've ever been to a conference, you know, there's certain things that get your attention, and Melody really got my attention. I just sensed her passion and the need that this home had, looking after children who either lost their parents or their parents weren't able to look after them and had nowhere to go. And there's this children's home that was raised up by a Spanish policeman and his wife many years ago through a need that they saw on television. And so all these years later, Melody's down there. How old is Melody? Is she 30 yet? She's 32. And she works alongside with the director of the home, Tina Garcia, who is, Tina's in her 40s? We don't know. And we don't ask her, because you don't ask those things. But Tina's been there, and so it's these two ladies in the middle of Honduras, which, you know, it's not the safest country in the world. And of course, they have some workers and stuff, but, you know, I don't know, my heart went out to the, and anyway, so a couple of years later, Eugene and I and my daughter Allie went down, and we spent a week down there, and my daughter spent about a month down there, and it really kind of opened up our eyes, and so we've sent now five teams. This is the first year we haven't sent one. We got one, Lord willing, going next spring, and we've just had an involvement with the children's home that's been a blessing to us, and they tell us it's been a blessing to them, and we're really glad about that. John comes to us with a career, like I said, a career of missionary work. And so he's going to share, he's going to, you know, deliver the word, and he's going to, you know, share about what he's learned. And I think the topic he picked was, you know, Christians in poverty. And there's this whole thinking about how should we be reacting and responding to needs in the world, because there's so many. And so we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say, John. So come on up, and God bless you as you come. Did they give you a mic? They did, didn't they?
You know, I was sitting there this morning and suddenly realized that today is a very, very special day in my life. Well, first of all, because I finally got to visit Faith Baptist Church here in Great Village. And yeah, that's something that I've wanted to do for some time, actually. I've heard so much about you and met some and appreciated so much the fact that you folk as a church have been helping take care of my 40 or some grandchildren. I only have two legally, but the other 40 or so, they're my grandchildren over at the home. So Lisa and I both have been really looking forward to meeting you people. We had a great time last night. The other reason today is a kind of special day in my life. I sort of just realized that this morning was on a Sunday afternoon, 51 years ago today, this bitter, hard-drinking 16-year-old kid passed from death to life. So, it was really a miraculous event, as it is in every life that's turned over to Jesus Christ. And changed a lot. I had no idea where that would lead, but I knew with whom it would be. And I have never, for one single moment, regretted that, believe me. So, here it is. This morning we're going to look at a text in Psalm 41. And I say verse 1, all right. Depends on which Bible I'm using, whether it's verse 1 or verse 2. In my French Bible, it's verse 2. Blessed is he who considers the poor. Now, the text doesn't say, blessed is he who judges the poor. It's not the same. You know, they're poor because they want to be. You ever heard that? How can a person say a thing like that and then pray? I don't know. Just, it's something I can't fathom, but God knows. Doesn't say blessed is he who judges the poor. It's blessed is he who considers the poor. And that word considers involves a lot. The text implies that we need to see the needs of others. We need to be able to see beyond our own needs to see those of others. We should be able to feel the needs of other people and do something for the needs of others as well. In Daniel chapter 4, verse 27, and in some Bibles it's verse 21, but in my, I'm using the New King James. I haven't used my English Bible very much in my life, and this one had the biggest print. Basically, the reason. Thank you. It says, "Therefore, O King, let my advice be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous, and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor." It's just one example of the kind of message that the prophets were giving to the nations, to leaders of the nations where they happened to be. In this case, the most powerful king in the world, Babylon. You know, the very first time I feared God was just a few months before he brought me into his family through faith in Christ. And I had started attending a church sort of against my will, an inner urging that I didn't understand. It was a Baptist church, strangely enough, in Westmount, Montreal. And I came to a realization that God is love. I didn't understand much more, but I suddenly realized how much he is love. Now, I remember one night, I was sort of mulling this over. I'd come back from church. Wow, God is love. And at the same time, you know how you can have two thoughts in your head at the same time, totally contradictory. And I was thinking of the one person in the world that I hated absolutely. And it was a decisive hate that I was never going to let go of. And I suddenly realized the contrast with the fact that God is love. And as I got into bed, I think I said it out loud. I said, I am going to hell. Because God is love. And I am just so opposite from him. And there was no, I should change. I really need to do something about this. That's it. It's a fact. I am what I am, and he is what he is, and that was it. It was a strange thing because I had no thought of changing, no thought of coming to God at all. But I felt condemned. The Bible contains more than 300 verses concerning the poor, concerning social justice, concerning God's deep interest in these two subjects. You know that there was a time in England when evangelical Christians were at the forefront of the struggle for social justice. That, unhappily, at least in North America, doesn't always seem to be the case. And I think it ought to be. It ought to be. It should be right out front. A man, a politician named, is it William Wilberforce? He fought for years and years and years the most discouraging battle to get England to pass a law forbidding slavery within its dominions. And it finally happened. He was backed up by another evangelical believer named, wrote Amazing Grace? John Newton. I get these mental blanks. It's all because of my age. It's not because I was always like that. I've always been that way. But I'm starting to get more of an excuse, that's all. So, yes, it's not strange, it's not something foreign to evangelical Christians, to conservative evangelical Christians, to be in the forefront of social justice. The word conservative I was referring to theologically, by the way. In Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 49. By the way, do you know why God condemned Sodom? Oh yes, you know that, right? Oh, Sodom and Gomorrah, they were horrible, right? God condemned them righteously. Well, Ezekiel tells us why. Look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. She and her daughter had pride, fullness of food, and abundance of idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. Wow. That was the sin of Sodom. You know, we talk about sometimes, well, North America's turning into something like Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, maybe. I'm afraid it might be. But it's not always what we think about. So what does the Word of God mean when we read, blessed is he who considers the poor? Well, first of all, we need to see the needs of others. Considers. In order to consider, we have to see something, right? We have to be aware. We have to know it's happening. Do we know what's happening around us here? And do we know what's happening in the world? Or is it just something that so-and-so knows about and I'm not really familiar with it, but I've got my own little life to live, you know? So we need to see the needs of others. It's hard, by the way, to see their misery because we don't want to really hear the complaints. It's tiresome. It gets on our nerves, you know. This poor me, I've got this problem, and I've got this problem, I've got that problem, and oh man, would you leave me alone with all your problems? We don't want to see it. It's negative. It's not comfortable. It gets on our nerves. I'd rather not see suffering. And personally, I'd rather not. I mean, there are some things that hurt and make me sad, you know. And if I'm going to read a novel, I mean, I want to see the last chapter, find out if it ends outright at least, you know. And then it's worth going through all the problems all through. But in life, it's not like that. It's not necessarily like that. And we need to see what's going on. It's hard to see their misery because we only see the inconvenience that that they cause us. We want to concentrate on our own ministries, on our own goals, our own paths in life. We want to concentrate on what we've planned. We have goals in our lives. I mean, some of us aren't all that goal-oriented, but we still have goals in our lives. We may not be that conscious of them, but they're there. We have things we want to do. We have things we want to accomplish. We have some point that we're headed to. So don't bother me with the problems of others. Okay? Don't distract me from what I want to do. Yeah, we're born with a certain goal orientation. I remember one of my sons, he was about, I think he must have been about 2.5 years old or something. We were visiting, Lisa and I were visiting a church. Oh, he was older than that. He was at least four or five. We were visiting a church because we were planning on, we thought we were going to Colombia at the time. And so they had invited us to go and present our project. And after church, I was talking with the pastor's wife. The pastor was away for something, and all of a sudden, I heard this ruckus in the church, and a couple of chairs fell down, and there was a little boy sitting down on the floor. My son, who was about 4 or so, he suddenly decided he wanted to come and see his dad. And so he had his eyes on his dad, and he just came through, plowed through the chairs, and shoved a boy out of the way because he was coming to see his dad. And I don't think he was even aware of the chairs he'd sent flying or that boy that landed on his rump, you know? He was coming to see his dad, that's all. He had a goal. Don't bother me with what's around me. Well, that's, for a 4-year-old, it might pass. But we need to be willing to be bothered by what's around us, right? So we need to see. It's hard to see if we don't make an effort. So let's make the effort. Now, what does that effort involve? Well, it involves three things, basically. First of all, stop. Stop. Let's forget for a moment our own personal interests, our own personal goals, our own personal wants and desires. Stop just concentrating and thinking so much about those for a moment so that we can see. Then, once we've stopped, look. Okay? Deliberately look. Do you see a problem? Do you see a sad face? Do you see some strange actions? Look to see. Observe. Do you see someone who seems to lack something essential? We need to be more observant of what's going on around us and in the world too. I'm going to get to that. So you stop and you look. Okay? That's what you teach your children before they cross the street, right? And what else do the children need to do? Listen. Listen. Be prepared to take the time to listen to the whole story. It's time well spent. Sometimes you see a problem, but then somebody comes in and says, yeah, well, that's just because of such and such a thing, and explain it away, and that's all. No. Listen to the whole story, not just some meme that you see on Facebook. Find out. Make the effort to find out. Okay. So stop, look, and listen. Why? Well, because it's what God is asking us to do. God wants us to consider. And we said the poor in this verse, the miserable, the unhappy, the suffering. It's what we're there for. You know, when we talk about seeing and looking, that involves near our home. But it also involves beyond our borders. There's so many desperate needs in other parts of the world that might make our own local needs sometimes be very small. So we need to be looking at both. What's around us? I mean, if we have sincerity about what's over there, we're concerned about what's around us. I know, I realize I'm probably preaching to the choir this morning, but good, I'll encourage you in what you're doing. We need to see what's around us, and we need to see what's further on. By the way, can anybody tell me what the chapter and verse that says in the Bible that says charity begins at home? Not in there? It's not in Revelation chapter 30 or something like that? Just making sure you realize that there's not that many chapters in the Revelation. It's not in there, is it? But it's so often quoted. I don't know if some people think it's a Bible verse or not, but it's certainly a very, very quoted comment. No, charity includes at home. Okay? It includes at home. It begins where the need is. Right? And sometimes people say charity begins at home. They mean me, myself, and I. Those are the three most important people in their lives. So, well, I guess we all have a bit of that, don't we? So let's not just keep repeating charity begins at home when we already have that selfish attitude in our hearts that we have to struggle with. We shouldn't feed it. Okay? And I'm not saying not to take care of ourselves and not to take care of those clothes. And we need to be conscious. But we've got bigger eyes than that. We've got more vision than that. We're able to see both here and there. Right? So seeing these needs means understanding them as well. Sometimes we rush to resolve a need without really knowing what we are doing. We discussed this a little bit last night. And there again, I really appreciated what I've seen of your teams going to Honduras, because they've been a real example of, I think, of doing things right. But it's possible to go with a great big desire to help and not do it right. Not really responding to a real need. I mentioned this last night of a group that went to a certain African country. I'm not sure just which one it was. And they built, wanted to help out a few Christians that were in this very primitive, from our standpoint, our way of looking things, tribe. And they decided to build them a beautiful church building. Okay, so sometimes it was nice, you know, nice white building and with pews and everything else. It was just, I think they probably even had a steeple with a bell, for all I know. I'm not sure of all the details. And whenever that team traveled there every couple of years or so, the building was in use. And the rest of times, no. They didn't use it. They didn't know, you know, it just didn't interest. It did not meet their needs. Okay, they were used to meeting in another kind of a setting. So they didn't sit down and say, what kind of thing can we do to help meet your need of for meeting or anything else? All right? Or there's a well-meaning, there was a well-meaning charitable movement to send powdered milk to certain areas in Africa where there was not easily clean water available. And so a lot of babies stopped getting breastfed and started being fed polluted, you know, milk made from polluted water. So there are things that actually can do more harm than good. All sorts of different things. Projects that we can say, hi, you know, let's get involved in this. And as I say, I've noticed that the work that your teams have been doing in Honduras, have been finding out what the real need is and have been working very respectfully with the people that are there. And that has been tremendous. It's important to consider the real needs and not just see what we want to do, right? Mm-hmm. And to help, in quotation marks. Now, if the first thing considering the poor means to see, also, we need to look beyond our own needs to see the needs of others. I've already underlined that. But when we're talking about considering, we're talking about considering the poor. And as I say, the poor is a very broad term. It can include just people who are suffering in different ways. The poor, those who are financially poor, just one example of that. But you see, we have our own needs. We have our own problems. Anyone here that doesn't have any problems, please raise your hand. Okay? Anyone who has needs that aren't really being met, just raise your hand. Okay, look around. Look at all those hands that are raised. Okay? So we're all in the same boat that way. And yet, we need to consider the needs of those who are suffering. And they have needs. But sometimes our own sufferings and our own disappointments and sorrows they can easily prevent us from seeing the needs of others. Because we're looking too close to home, looking right inside, looking at our own suffering. I mean, you know the typical hospital visit. I say typical. I hope it's not typical. But these hospital visitors, they come to visit you in the hospital, and they say, "Oh, well, you know, I remember the operation they did on my liver." Yeah. Or, "Oh, that's nothing if you knew about my bad back." And they just sit there and they talk about all their own physical problems. And you're lying in your hospital bed listening to this. And yeah, I wonder when visiting hour is going to be over. You see, we do have this tendency to be so aware of our own problems. We go to try and encourage or console someone else, but immediately we find ourselves stuck in our own stories. So it means that we need to look beyond our own needs and problems to see those of others. There was a certain time there was a tendency to take, you know, the text about love your neighbor as yourself. And they said, "So you see, you need to learn how to love yourself before you can love your neighbor." Excuse me, but everybody loves themselves. You already love yourself. No, but I mean, some people hate the way their face looks or the way their body looks or the way... Yeah, I know. You know why you hate the way your face looks or your body looks? Because you love yourself so much you think you deserve a nicer face or a nicer body. Yep. That's really it. So, no, you love yourself. Don't worry about that. Okay? You don't have to work on it. You love yourself already. I'm not saying you love yourself too much, but you love yourself. So love your neighbor just as much. Or just in the same way you love yourself. Care about the needs of your neighbor. Whoops, I've kind of forgot to advance there. But, and I wonder if this is the problem of those religious people who were passing by. You know when that man was lying on the side of the road half dead in the parable or the story? I don't know if it was a parable or if he was describing something that actually happened, but of the Good Samaritan. And this priest went by and didn't pay any attention. Maybe he didn't even see. And the Levite went by and he just went on the other side of the road, you know. I've got my problems, maybe. I don't know, but it could be that they were just so absorbed with their own concerns, with their own problems, that they didn't stop to think about the need of that poor man lying half dead on the side of the road. They didn't think, what's going to happen to him if he stays there? Is he going to die? Yeah. Is there some way of helping him? No. They're thinking maybe, boy, how am I going to advance in rank over at the temple service? Or how am I going to get there on time? Or how am I going to... whatever. Just a little curious story. Whether it's true or not, I have no idea, but it makes a good story anyway. Maybe it's true. Some seminary professor had given a test. People are on analyzing that passage about the Good Samaritan. And he said, I want you to work on it, and then you're going to come to my office, which was in another building of the campus. You're going to come to my office, and you're going to share with me how you understood this text. Well, between the classroom were these one by one, okay, in a certain order, you'll be called on. There was a certain distance, and he planted somebody in rags, lying down, seemingly injured, you know, in between on the way. And he told them, you know, you come to my office, and you have to come very quickly when it's your turn. Don't waste time, just come right to my office. And so students would go right to his office, but some would stop, you know, and take care, see what was going on with this person lying down. And they're the ones that passed the test. They're the ones that passed the test. The ones that did not go that quickly to the office. So, as I say, was this a true story? Did someone actually do it? I think it was a great idea anyway. But sometimes we're so concerned about our need, our goal, our problem, our sadness, that we're not really able to connect or properly sympathize with others. I remember when I was a very young pastor, and my older brother, who was 43 years old, died of cancer. And it was a shock to me. And I realized for some time I had difficulty dealing rationally with the topic of cancer. I heard about somebody just got cancer. Oh, and I got just seized up inside of myself emotionally. I couldn't deal with it. And then I realized what my problem was, that I was still suffering about my brother, my older brother. And that I needed to deal with that. I needed to deal with that so that I could be free to deal with people. I mean, I'd have to choose between a hysterical and useless form of compassion or hardening my heart in order not to see the problem. And neither one was really good until I was able to deal with the hurt that I felt about the death of my brother. And then I was able to, well, deal in a rational way and feeling compassion in a rational way with other people who had this problem. The thing is it may be that you need to face certain kind of sadness in your life. It could be. You need to recognize it. See, it's there. Because sometimes we kind of bury it away. It's there. Face it. Think about it. Consider it, too. You do need to consider your own sufferings. Recognize it and deal with it. Or let the Lord deal with it, even better. Talk with the Lord about it. Tell him how you feel about it. If you think he's been unfair, tell him. If you feel... you may have feelings that you think you can't voice. Well, God can take it and you can talk to him about that. And then he can deal with it in your heart. And then you can put that aside and be freed up to deal with the sufferings of others. Okay? He won't necessarily take away the pain of what's happened, but he'll make you able to. He'll accompany you and make you able to deal with other people's problems, because otherwise you'll just be paralyzed, you'll be closed up, and your heart's just going to get narrower and narrower and narrower to be able to deal with others. So we need to be able to see the needs of others, the poor. But when we see that word considers the poor, it also involves feeling the needs of others. You see, yes, we need to be rational, but we also need to feel. We need to learn to share the heart of Jesus, who was moved with compassion when he saw the multitude. You know that word compassion? It comes from two Latin words. Com means with. Passion means suffering. Suffering with. So if you're moved with compassion, if you feel the needs and problems and sufferings of others, that means you're going to suffer. There are times when you'll wake up with a wet pillow. There are times when you'll wonder whether you wish that you never felt any love or compassion because it hurts too much. But you don't want to be any other way. You don't want to be any other way. I don't mean you're considering continually hurting all your life, but you get to feel the hurts of others and you'll hurt too. That happens. We need to learn to share the heart of Jesus. In Matthew 9:36, it says, he was moved with compassion when he saw the multitude. In Matthew 14:14, it says the same thing. In Matthew 15:12, it says the same. You can see that several times in the gospel. That's how Jesus was. So if we're going to be Jesus people, if we're going to be followers of Jesus, we need to be something like him. Now, early in my pastorate, a friend, in fact, he was something of a mentor to me, he told me that, he said to me that I needed to always keep a professional attitude regarding the sufferings and sorrows of people I dealt with, that I could never be a good pastor if I got emotionally involved. That kind of struck me. And then I thought, I think I would rather be the world's worst pastor. Oh, by the way, that friend of mine was also one of the world's worst pastors. Happily, in that sense, he was very involved. He was a good pastor. But I don't know why he said that at the time. He was thinking of something else, but it was the way he worded it, I guess. And I'm glad to say that he didn't really live that way either. So, you know what Galatians chapter 6, verse 2 says? Bearing one another's burdens. Now, a lot of us like the other part that says each one must bear his own burden. That's it. Everybody bears their own burden, right? And we just, yeah, but it just before that said, bear one another's burden. What the Apostle Paul is saying, everyone's responsible for their own lives? Sure. But we're also responsible for one another. And let's not forget that, right? So, bear one another's burdens. That means to suffer. To feel, as I said, is to suffer. If Paul could say, I feel up in my flesh what is lacking in the afflictions of Christ for the sake of his body, which is the church. That's in Colossians 1:24. I used to find that really surprising. And then I understood, no, his body is the church. And it wasn't the lacking. Christ did not lack in sufferings in order to save us. All right? He suffered fully, complete. He said, it is finished on the cross. However, his body, the church, continues to suffer. And Paul was saying, in my flesh, I was sort of doing my part, completing this amount of suffering that the church needs to suffer. Not in order to make up for anything that Jesus didn't do for us. No. Not in order to gain something. Simply, it's part of being what being a Christian is all about. there is pain. There is pain. It's not in order to gain something. It's simply part of Christian life. Part of life, I guess. But, the church suffers. And I think that many of those afflictions that he felt were afflictions. I know that he suffered physically very much in many ways. But many of them were afflictions of the heart as well. His heart suffered. Now, if we need to see, and if we need to consider, you know, further away from our own personal interests, if we need to feel the afflictions of others, we also need to do something regarding the needs of others. To consider involves action. Okay? We need to be activists. We need to act. We need to do something. Once again, not to be what people tend to call activists, where we just keep doing in order to be doing something. You know, I have to be busy, and we do busy work. That's like nervous action. But when we consider, when we see needs, we need to see what we can do to help, to resolve, to help work out these needs. I'm so glad that there's not a clock up there so I can just keep on talking. I think that this is about it, though. But so we need to do something. We really need to act to help out others. We're afraid to say sometimes with Jesus, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden." That's what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 11, is it verse 28? But the bearing of other people's burdens just might be too much for us, maybe. But we're not alone. We have Jesus. We have the Holy Spirit. So let's not be afraid. Say, "Yeah, come to me. You labor, you're heavy laden, you got problems, come to me. Come to me. I'll do what I can to help." And with the Lord, we need to put our feet to our prayers, body to our feelings. Whether we're dealing with physical, emotional, or spiritual afflictions of our brothers or of those who are unsaved as well. There are times when I don't believe in prayer. Does that shock you? If we're praying without being willing to do something, you know, like the family devotions, where the dad was praying that God would provide some groceries for the neighbor because who was widowed and was going through a hard time, and it was Thanksgiving. I guess this was an American story where Thanksgiving was a big deal. And he was praying that God would just provide for that lady. Finally, his little boy said, talking, "Daddy, Daddy, why are you bothering God with that? We can do it." So, Now, yes, pray. I do believe in prayer all the time. But if you're praying without being willing to do anything, it just could be a form of hypocrisy. You know? "I couldn't care less, God, but I know you care, so please do something." Basically what we're saying. So let's put action to our prayers. Then when Jesus was moved with compassion, he did something about it. When the Samaritan felt compassion for the man by the roadside, he did something about it, and it cost him. It cost him quite a bit, I think. Not just time. I mean, he put in some extra money there as well. Job showed his compassion when he sought to counsel and encourage those who were afflicted. His friends were very sarcastic about it in Job 4:4. You know, "You're the one who counseled and helped and comforted the afflicted, blah, 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 you know, and look at you now." But actually, he did something about it, and it cost him quite a bit as well. If your actions don't reflect your compassion, it may be because you don't have compassion. You have feelings. that are only feelings, but they're not real compassion. If you have compassion, you'll act in the way you can. We can't all do the same thing. Somebody with millions can give millions of dollars. Somebody with physical abilities can give physical help. Somebody with mental abilities can give knowledge as well, and so on. Whatever we have, whether it's a little or a lot, it's what God gave us. It's what God gave us. And God expects us to do what we can with what he gave us, not with what he gave the other guy. All right? That's why Jesus said to Peter in the very last bit of Gospel of John, he said, what business is of yours? What happens to him? You follow me. So what mark would you get in an exam on compassion? What's happening there? Yeah. What mark would you get in an exam on compassion? You might be a great doer. You might be a great talker. You might be an excellent organizer. And you might seem to be a very successful person, to be very spiritual. But do you share the heart of Jesus? Do you share the heart of Jesus? Do you have compassion for the multitudes, which means the individuals? Do you have compassion for the individual with whom you're dealing? Or are you just thinking, I only wish this would go away? What kind of compassion do you have? Enough to be able to see what's troubling them? Enough to be able to feel what's troubling them? Enough to be able to do something, to do what you can to help out? To what extent? Think of the compassion Jesus had for you and me. God bless you, and thank you for this opportunity to share.